Hi, and welcome to the second in our series of podcasts. I'm FWI web manager Michael Target.
And I'm John Riley. I'm the news editor of the magazine.
Right. As I said, this is the second in our series of podcasts. The first one has proved quite popular. We've had over 600 downloads so far, and lots of positive feedback.
So thanks very much for all you people listening out there. And what we'll do this month is we'll keep the format the same, which is two features for each podcast. And looking ahead, what we've got lined up for you this time is highlights from the Grassland event. And also, you might like to try this one out if you fancy having a go at cooking, where I went down to talk to Farmers Weekly's cookery expert, Philippa Vine.
Cheers, John. Okay, as we mentioned, first up, we've got highlights from the Grassland UK event down in the southwest. Two of our lads, the machinery editor Nick Fone and the features editor David Cousins, were down there looking at some of the machines. And they're profiling new machines as they're being demonstrated. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, we're here at Grassland UK in the glorious sunny Somerset. And there's plenty of machines buzzing about, lots of visitors here, buoyed by the news yesterday that farmers are due to receive a good portion of their single farm payment within the next 2 weeks. So that's great news, and everyone's the spirit here is very buoyant.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here actually. They reckon more than 4,000 people here. And several of the machinery companies have actually said that farmers are holding off from buying machines until they get their single farm payments. So that'll be good news for them as well.
Okay, so the plan is to get around a few of the demonstration plots, see what the manufacturers have got on offer, see if there's anything new, different or interesting that was think's worthy of a bit of attention. Right, so let's go. So, David, we're here on the New Holland stand next to a TM190. What's the significance of this tractor?
Well, it looks like an ordinary TM190, doesn't it? And it is in many ways. But see this sticker up here? It actually that says 100% powered by biodiesel. That's the interesting sticker.
Oh, right. So anybody can run this on chip fat, basically, can they?
Well, no, not exactly. No, we're not quite there yet. What you can't run it on is cold pressed biodiesel, because apparently all it will do is just gum up the liners, the bores and the liners. What you can run it on is what's called RME biodiesel, and you can use 100% biodiesel for this, which is quite something really.
Well, that sounds excellent. Is this true for all tractors across the New Holland range then, or?
No, this is for the TM190s, which aren't a common rail diesel engine. With the common rail diesels, because they're generally fussier about fuels, you can have a maximum 30% biodiesel for that. But it's pretty significant, really.
Yeah, and the way things are moving, that sounds like it'll become more and more popular if the red diesel prices continue to rise.
Well, that's right. We're not quite there on the economics yet, but in time, this could be what we're all running our tractors on. Now, Nick, you're going to tell me why the cab's facing the wrong way on this tractor, aren't you?
Yeah, this is Class Zerion, which has a cab that will pivot from a forward-facing position, like a normal tractor, and the cab actually jumps up, swivels round, and you can probably hear now it's just turning round to face rearwards, and it's got a set of triple mowers on the front that the cab then faces over and the driver can see out.
Yeah, it all looks very clever, but what does all this cost then, do we reckon?
Oh, I think it's about £150,000 list price, so it's a fairly pricey bit of kit, as you can imagine.
Cheaper half the price.
Yeah, he's just folding up now, and he's...
What?
Okay.
What sort of...
There he goes.
What sort of output are you going to get with this? It's a hell of a width, isn't it?
I think you'll be knocking down a good 100 acres of grass a day, at least.
Okay, Nick, we're on the Rico stand with a... I guess that's a Feller mower, is it? What's the importance of this?
Well, Feller have just brought out a new mower which can pivot from the centre, much more like a trail unit. Hang on a second, we've got it coming past us now. attached to a Landini Legend 135. I'm guessing that's 135 horsepower. And as you can hear, the mower is working alongside us.
That's making a nice job, isn't it?
It's a really tidy cut there. It's following the ground quite closely there with it's because it's centrally mounted, it's able to pivot and get all the contours. So, David, we're here on the New Holland stand again. What exactly is this piece of kit that's trailing around behind this baler?
Well, it's a very substantial-looking bit of kit, isn't it? And it comes as substantial bits of kit often do from Canada. And it's actually going to be sold by Ernest Doe in this country. And it's a three-bale, a sort of three-pack accumulator for big square bales. And pushes one to one side, then one to the other, then one in the middle, and drops them all off, which obviously makes them a lot easier to pick up.
Yeah, quite right. And is it expensive, David?
Well, it is. It's I think it's about £11,000, which I know isn't really a farmer's machine, but for contractors, you can see the benefit of having all the bales together like
the
that.
The time save, yeah, in terms of stacking in the field, yeah.
A problem for contractors is if they just do that for a farmer customer, he's very happy about that, but is he going to want to pay the extra cost that the contractor's going to have to charge him for doing that? Now, the answer is probably not.
No, but that said, the contractor might be able to get on and get the job done that much quicker and move on to the next job, presumably.
Yeah. So there's benefits for both sides, really, but it's a very well-built bit of kit, that.
It is, yeah, looks it. Anyway.
Now, I'm talking to Colin Bowen from Thomas & Fontaine. Now, they sell a tyre, secure block tyre recovery service, and it's a machine that essentially bales the tyres, and it's an extraordinary looking machine. Tell us what's happening here, Colin.
Right, we're busy loading tyres into a large static bale chamber. The tyres are about to be compressed down, which will end up with about 130 tyres compressed into a block, about 5 foot 6 by 4 foot 6 by about 2 foot 6 deep, and weighing approximately 1 ton. This will then be used in construction projects on farms.
Yeah, and I see you can use different sizes of tyre in there.
Yeah, we can accommodate tyres right up to 38 inch tractor rear tyres and even lorry tyres.
Yeah. And what's it actually wrapping them up with?
The finished bundle, when fully compressed, is contained within five high tensile steel wires, which are galvanised. Should have a safe life of 30 to 35 years. In situations where we work where the blocks are being used in extremely corrosive situations, then we can put stainless steel wires on, which will extend the lifetime, obviously.
Yeah, well, this isn't a machine that people can buy, is it? This is something that you're offering as a contract service with a mobile machine.
That's right. We go all around the country. Basically, it's an add-on service to the secure covers product, whereby we put a net on the pit instead of using car tyres, which is obviously a downside, more environmentally friendly. The situation is, once you've bought a secure cover and you don't need the car tyres, you've then got a waste problem, which this machine resolves by converting waste tyres into a building product.
And I know the big problem with tyres is going to be with the new agricultural waste regulations, but how many of these old tyres are there around the country?
Well, there's been estimates of at least 100 million tyres on farms in the UK.
That's an amazing figure. That's a hell of a mountain to be around for a while. Yes, absolutely. So this is an Environment Agency approved use of the tyres.
Absolutely. The Environment Agency do use these tyre blocks themselves in their own projects. Yes, totally approved by the Environment Agency for use in engineered construction projects.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you.
Right, so it's been really busy today. The sun's out, lots of people here. Great news for the industry, a few people out spending a bit of money or showing interest at least. And a good day all round. Back to you in the studio then, Mike.
Right, thanks for that, Nick. Plenty of noisy machinery on offer there, John.
Yeah, sounds like machinery boys were in their element there, and an ideal day out for them. One thing that hasn't come across on the podcast was that they were so keen to get close to the action that they were almost mowed along with one of the demo plots. We thought, just because we didn't know how you'd take it, that we'd edit out the expletives for now as they ran for cover.
Yeah, well, I couldn't find the beep button on the computer, John, to be honest.
But we will find it, and maybe in the future we'll leave those in and beep them out.
Bloopers outtakes.
Yeah, bloopers out.
Right, anyway, now for something completely different. A slice of farm life. And John went on a very pleasant excursion down to Sussex to visit Philippa Vine, who does the Farm Life flavours, if you're a magazine regular. And she took him through one of her new recipes, all cooked with local food. So, John, over to you.
Hi, Mike. Thanks very much. I'm here with Philippa Vine, who runs her own cookery school down here in Sussex. And she also doubles up, we're very glad to say, as Farmers Weekly's cookery expert. Hello, Philippa.
Hello, John.
And what are you going to cook for us today?
Right, for the July's issue of Farm Life, we're going to be kicking off with crispy battered vegetables and herbs, which have been making the most of all the delicious vegetables we've got in the summer, followed by a raised pork pie and then a lemon tart with summer fruits.
Sounds lovely. What's the first step then?
Right, should we go off into the garden and pick all the herbs?
That would be great, yeah. So what are we looking for here then, Philippa?
All right, I've got the perennial lovage herb, which is a fantastic herb in the summer. It's great for pork dishes. Right, so the other herb I want to use for this particular recipe is sage leaves, and this is good for all the meat dishes. I try and pick all the large leaves because they just look great once you've sort of tucked them into batter. They almost look like saucers when you've put them in there. And also, as well, for this recipe, I'm going to be using some lovely summer vegetables, which are from the garden. Or I have got a very good pick-your-own just sort of 5 miles down the road as well.
Okay, so everything is local then?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, we've got such a short summer season that it's just so great to use all these wonderful produce.
Okay, that sounds lovely. Back inside then. Okay, we're back inside now, and we've assembled our ingredients. And Philippa, what have we here?
Right, we've got some beetroot, courgette, we've got radishes, and of course we've got the herbs that we've just picked. Also, I've got some baby broad beans and some spinach as well. And don't forget, all these vegetables are not pre-cooked at all. They only get cooked when they're battered and in the oil, so they're quite, it's very nutritious, and they make a great starter or nibbles before your meal with drinks. I would say this batter would be enough for 4 people. So if you kick off with 110 grams of plain flour, 110 grams of corn flour, 2 level teaspoons of baking powder, and just a little bit less than 400 mils of cold water. And that's it.
Okay, so what's the first step now then?
Right, measure out 110 grams of the plain flour. Then you put the corn flour as well. Mix that in together. This is my take on... there's a lot of people have done this recipe and they've used egg yolks in and everything, but I haven't. This is just a plain eggless batter, and 2 teaspoons of baking powder, and then some cold plain water as well. And you just pour the water onto the flour mixture and then just beat it up with a whisk. With all batters, it's always best to make them sort of like 10 minutes before you actually want to use them, because you would find that they do actually get thicker once the flour grain is sort of swelled up, so from the liquid. So it's coming nicely there. It doesn't matter if it's a bit lumpy, because it's fine. Right, okay, we leave that to one side, and then now we're going to slice up the raw vegetables.
Okay, so that was a fairly quick whisk, wasn't it? That was just half a minute or so,
oh,
really,
yes.
There.
And it's a good, quick recipe, this is. With the courgettes, I'm not going to peel them or anything, just sort of put them into chunks, fairly sort of about an inch thick. I will peel the beetroot now, raw beetroot, this makes a nicer change to all the vinegared beetroot that you get in supermarkets, which are ghastly. So you can really taste the flavour. And I'm just going to thinly slice these beetroot, because don't forget we're not cooking them beforehand. So we'll do two, I think, because they're quite small beetroot.
Yeah, they're about golf ball size, aren't they, these beetroot? They're not, right. They're not the really big ones that you get sometimes. They're a lovely rich colour, actually, looks nice.
Especially with my hands now, it's going to look like I've been painting. Mm. Right, and then the baby radishes, I'm just going to sort of chop in half, top and tail them like that.
Again, they're very small and straight off the leaves, aren't they, there?
Yeah, lovely and fresh. Right, now that we're halfway through the vegetables, chopping them all and preparing them, we'll put the oil on to heat in a sort of shallow pan with some sunflower oil, because that hasn't got much flavour and it won't detract the flavour of the vegetables. So put that on the high heat, obviously watch it, and get it when it's really quite hot. A good way of testing that is to put a cube of bread, and then when that gets golden in half a minute to a minute, then you know that the oil's hot enough.
Okay, so you've put about a couple of centimetres of oil in there. It's quite deep, and at the moment it's on maximum heat.
So, right, if we just lower that heat down a little slightly, because we'll get the batter ready, we'll just whisk that up again, and as you can see it's slightly gone thicker, which is even better. Now I'm going to put some seasoning in. Put some pepper and plenty of salt as well into the batter, just to bring out the flavour of the vegetables. I think that's perfect.
Okay, and what heat is the pan on now?
Well, it's just beginning to not quite smoke, but warm, hot enough now.
Okay.
Because the bread went nice golden colour. So now I'm ready to dip the vegetables in. So I'm going to kick off with this baby broad bean. So just literally put a little dab of batter in, and then put it in the oil. As you can see, it all puffs up. Now that's the baking powder working and makes it nice and light. And it's just such a wonderful way of eating baby broad beans, because you don't have to skin them or shell them at all. It's just a whole pod. It's sort of the thickness of your finger. And when they're all golden, take them out, and then people can taste them.
Lovely. That's the bit I've been looking forward to. So you've moved that around in the pan just to make sure it's nice and evenly cooked, yes?
Yeah, that's right. Brown. And they do actually stay crisp for quite some time, actually, so it's quite good. It's not an instant thing you have to sort of serve straight away. So I'm going to put some beetroot in now, just put that in the batter. I'm afraid it's a bit of a messy job. With fingers, it's absolutely fine, or you could use a spoon. Put that in there. I just love the way it puffs up, makes it like a saucer. Now I'm going to put some courgette in. And some radishes. I'm fishing them out with a slotted spoon with holes in, so the oil gets out of there. And then on the side, I've got some kitchen paper ready just to catch any of the oil, extra oil, that the vegetables have been cooking in. So there we are. I'm just going to put that beetroot. The broad bean is ready now. Just taking that out onto the kitchen paper. I'm going to do the lovage. So what you do, it's all a bit, if you just have a few couple of sprigs of lovage and shake them out so they spread out the leaves, and then put them in the batter. You can hear they pop up. And then we'll do the sage leaf as well.
So you say they stay nice and crisp. So you could do this ahead of a dinner party or something like that, say, and it could as much as an hour ahead or something?
Oh, yes. I have done that. I mean, ideally, it would be sort of half an hour, but if you're pushed for time, an hour is fine, and they do stay crisp. And the crucial bit is don't forget to season them as well once they're out of the batter.
What are you going to use to season them with?
Just some freshly coarse ground salt, that's all. And then I've got a delicious dipping sauce that I'll take you through as well, which is a really nice thing you can dip them into if you don't like them just plainly cooked. Look lovely, don't they?
They do look really good. I'm I'm very keen to have a go at those.
Hang on, I'm just going to put some seasoning on first. Try the...
Okay, so I'm going to try the sage first, a little bit hot.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't blow on them first.
Oh, yeah, that is gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. That's really tastes the sage. It's a lovely good. Aromatic flavour. It's that really is. Lovely.
But, I mean, you wouldn't choose to eat the sage on its own, would you? But with that, just that little bit of frying, it just takes the edge off it, doesn't it?
Does, absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. Just the right amount of salt on there as well.
Right, with these fried vegetables and herbs, it's quite nice to have a little bowl of something that people can dip into rather than just eat them plainly. Personally, I like eating them plainly, but there's always it's quite nice to have an additional thing for your guests to have. So for this sort of nice pungenty sauce, you've got 2 teaspoons of sesame oil. That's got quite a strong flavour. But if you haven't got that in your store cupboard, don't worry. Just use any oil that's to hand. 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar. 2 tablespoons of soya sauce. And then about a piece of root ginger, about the size of a walnut. And then we're going to grate that, peel that and grate that. And then 2 tablespoons of honey. Nice runny local honey. Obviously you don't need any salt for that sauce because you've got the soya sauce for the saltness. Right, then you just, ask the honey's being put in, you just whisk it up together like that, and there you are, and pour it in a nice pretty bowl. As it's such a beautiful day, shall we eat this all outside? So we put the soya sauce, dipping sauce in the middle, and then put the vegetables, which have been seasoned with salt, around the dish. And then pass them around. Everyone can help themselves and choose which one they like. Doesn't that look lovely?
It looks really nice. I'm looking for the sage leaves again myself. I shall be picking those out. I think those are my favourite so far. Okay, so shall we go and take them outside and have a munch? That would be lovely. Okay, we're outside now. We've got our crispy vegetables looking very nice set out on the platter as our starter. And Philippa, what have you chosen for the rest of the meal?
Right, I've chosen for the main course a raised pork pie. It's because this is a fantastic dish you can do. You can have it in the fridge and just sort of serve it cold with lots of lovely salads. And also I've done it... I've chosen that one because you must cook it the day before and have it set, so when your guests arrive on the day you don't have to be slavishly cooking something in the kitchen. And then for the pudding we're doing a lemon tart, and again that's something you can do before your guests arrive, and it's served cold with some lovely fruit, summer fruits. So all this is, you know, lovely entertaining for guests.
So perfect, yes, for if you're having people around during the afternoon on a summer's day, you can get this meal ready nice and early.
So there you have it, and a really nice summer's day lunch or dinner.
Okay, and if thanks very much, Philippa. And if you want to catch up with the rest of this recipe, Farm Life will be featuring the whole meal. That's the crispy vegetables, the roast pork pie and the lemon tart. In an early edition in July for Farm Life. Okay, thanks very much for that, Philippa. And Mike, I bet you wish you were here, don't you?
Right, thanks for that, John. Now you're back in the studio. It sounded like you had a good time down there, though I'm surprised the fluffy bit on the end of the microphone to the M1 piece. I thought you were going to eat that at one point. You sounded so hungry.
You can tell, can't you, that as all this wonderful food was being laid out before me, that I got hungrier and hungrier, and I was just, give me the crispy vegetables, and yeah. Finally handed them over.
And you obviously were too hungry to bother to bring any back to the studio. And
yeah, well, it would have been silly, really, to waste them. They're best fresh, you know, best nice and fresh.
Of course.
Yeah. Served in a bowl. Lovely.
Right. Oh, I'll let you off anyway. Okay, well, that's pretty much it. I hope you've enjoyed it. Coming up on the next podcast is highlights from the Cereals event. So make sure you don't miss that. So goodbye from me, Michael Target.
And cheerio from me, John Riley.